All right, we're going to start with a little maintenance-oriented joke here. And I have to say it's a joke because if it's not funny, you have to know to laugh so I don't feel so bad. There was a technician who was always having problems. His old machine tools were breaking down frequently. It was a mess. The machine downtime was seriously affecting output, and the technician's job was on the line. And to make matters worse, he came home every night to a bad relationship with his wife. You could say his life was in pieces. So one day he decided to glue a photo of his troublesome wife on his toolbox, and he carried that to the office every single day. When his wife noticed this, she was so impressed, and she asked him why he did it. The technician replied, "You know, when a problem comes up, no matter how impossible it is, I look at your picture, and the problem disappears." His wife was so excited by this revelation, she said, "See, you can see how miraculous and powerful I am for you." And in response, the technician said, "Yes, I look at your picture and I say to myself, what other problem can be greater than this one?" Hey guys, I want to introduce you to IMTS 2024 Elevate. This is a creative mix of programming and receptions with topics exclusive to our industry. Job shops, women in manufacturing, and Spanish-speaking programs for our Latin American visitors. Let's talk about job shops. Each day from 1 to 4, there will be programming specific to the lifeblood of manufacturing, the job shop. Here you will learn how to benchmark against your peers and develop the shop of the future, including automation and additive manufacturing. And then let's talk about our Spanish-speaking friends. Here we'll share a productive moment with the most influential machine tool OEMs exhibiting at the show and the dealer and agent network supporting your needs in the Latin American region. And lastly, the women that make manufacturing move. Here you'll get inspired by networking with the influential women of our industry. And there will be a keynote presentation, Women in Motion, Manufacturing a Path to the Moon, from Sharon Cobb, a PhD from NASA's Space Launch Systems Program. You can learn more about these programs at imts.com/elevate. That's imts.com/elevate.
If the sound of a machine tool removing metal gets your blood pumping, then you are Metalworking Nation. This is Making Chips, where we talk all things metalworking, engineering and design, production and tooling combined with business best practices, technology, marketing, news, and new media for manufacturing professionals. Here are your hosts. Let's make some chips.
Manny, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Nick? Thanks for having me here.
Jokes aside, being able to work in this industry with your wife is something that you can accomplish, and you don't even have to put a picture of her on your toolbox.
Yeah, it's a picture that's stuck in my brain every day. And you know what? It's not for everybody. I've heard that it's a very difficult thing to do, but you know what? She really is, I guess, my best friend, you know. But besides that, I learned from her. She is the owner of TechCNC, and she does what she does well, and I do what I do well. So that's how it works.
And sometimes, you know, they do that, like, okay, the wife will own the business, and you can get some benefits from being a woman-owned business. And what I think is awesome in your case is, number one, you can tell your best friends. And number two, you're both, like, really working in the business. You're not just doing it for some advantages. She's a boss. She's your boss.
And the thing is that we didn't do it that way. You know, it's me leaving Chicago, going to Houston, and being apart. So we're doing the whole Zoom, all that stuff before it was cool, before COVID. This is 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So she really incorporated the business and did everything on her end. Did the logo. At the end of the day, we can get benefits. I did. And then also as a minority, right? We are Hispanic and she's a woman-owned business. But the truth of the nature is that we're so grateful that customers call us. We don't look for that.
I mean, hey, if there's advantages out there, take them.
One day we will.
She's definitely kicking butt.
Yeah. So. And she does know the business. Sometimes better than I do.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get you a proper introduction here, though. Our guest today is a machine tool maintenance expert. He's an entrepreneur in both the USA out of Houston and in Mexico in Saltillo. He's a loyal employee to his boss, Dayanara Pasillas. We call her D. And he's the founder and VP of business development for TechCNC. Welcome to the show, Manny Pasillas. What's up, dude?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nick, for having me here. Pleasure to be here, man.
Yeah. We always have fun when we're together. So I want to start and just tell the origin story. Like whenever I bring in a new personality, I want people to get like
how they got into the industry, what brought them into this metalworking world that we all live in. I guess we could start at the beginning for you. What was like the initial trigger where you first saw a CNC machine, first started thinking about cutting metal and stuff like that?
Oh, it was interesting that growing up back in the 90s, the hobby of mine was my brother-in-law had a customization shop for cars.
Oh, cool.
In particular, lowriders and, you know, the sound systems.
The bouncy ones with the big subs in the back.
Yeah. I was a kid, man, and he had all these cars and it was always intriguing, right? And he opened up a shop and I would go with him, and I credit him for kind of getting me into this field of mechanical, electrical. I did it as a hobby, which is always best. Do what you love, right? Yeah. So,
and do what you think is cool.
Yeah, and it was. And, you know, a kid, I was 12 years old. Probably the first time I started tinkering with stereos. 14, started mastering. By 16, I was hooking up complete hydraulic systems with 16 batteries, 16 switches.
Nice.
Removing the shocks and putting in hydraulic cylinders.
Trying to make the car bounce.
Yeah, and it did. You know, and it's awesome. It was something I didn't understand until later I went to school for the theory. But it was some high technical stuff I was doing. But to me, it was, I was making this car bounce and we'd win competitions. We were traveling the country with, you know, our car club.
Oh, cool.
So where were
those
guys?
What was the name of the car club?
Lifestyle.
Lifestyle.
There was only another Lifestyle, which is out of California. And the one that we had here in Chicago was the only syndicated one allowed.
Nice.
At the time. You had to be like top notch.
Really?
That's cool. So that was cool. I mean, later on, my dad said I had to go to school for something, right? You get to that point in life. I really started in civil engineering. A lot of friends were in construction. I'm like, well, God didn't build me to hold a shovel. He gave me some brains, so let me tell them what to do, right?
That was your thought at the time.
Yeah, so I was going to school, doing all my generals and all that stuff. I opted to get a job in the summer, and I ended up going to a cutting tool manufacturer. They had engineering in there, and I was doing school, and one of my projects in school was design something that functions, right? For engineering graphics, that was my class back then. I'm talking about back in 97, 98, before the Super AutoCAD. Mm-hmm. So this is on pencil and paper, and they had to translate it into a...
like a drafting board?
Yep, and no I had to way. Do it back into a 2D. We didn't even have 3D AutoCAD or anything. It was just rendering at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
I designed this little mechanism that helped our company avoid some downtime on their machines. As a other like plus was, the engineer was also Hispanic. Mm-hmm. He became like a little bit of a role model to me, right? I'm like, wow, you know, we could get into this. And with the mechanical stuff as a kid and this, and I, you know what? I switched to mechanical engineering.
Yeah. So not civil engineering where you're designing
bridges and structures and roads.
Yeah, know? Exactly. You went into...
mechanisms and...
Yeah, which is kind of back to like your original love of like making cars bounce, right? It's all hydraulics, mechanical, cool stuff like that.
Yep. And so my minors that I would start to take instead of like basket weaving or some beat, you know, class, you know.
Yeah. So,
I would end up...
Hey, some basket weaver is listening right now and they're like, that's an important class. We should all take it.
No, my sister, she went to Columbia and she took basket weaving. But she's cool like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
We use it as a joke, but it's a true story.
But no, I get the point you're making. Some of these like credits you get just to like check a box and get a degree. And I took so many stupid classes that's like, come on, how is this really helping me build a career, build a life, build a way to bring wealth into my family?
And correct.
Like, just, what am I doing?
The way I guess my brain works is like I always have 20 tabs open and I need something to fill it in, you know? My electives I chose were electronics, right? Mm-hmm. Back then, they didn't have mechatronics. It was just either mechanical or electrical engineering. Mm-hmm. I kind of fell into making my own mechatronics discipline because I knew how both were related. How can you build something that's all mechanical and not know the electronics behind it? Mm-hmm. So that's how I started doing that. I went to another company that also doing cutting tools, and they had CNCs. Even though the first one did, but it was more manual machines, fancy manual machines, you know, making drill bits. But I went to this other one and it was a more specialty tool company and it was all CNC. It was daunting, but it was awesome because it was a challenge. I learned how to program. I learned robotics. I learned high precision. I was part of the design team with them. It was fun. It was a small company and them small companies where you learn everything. So some people say, hey, big dummy, don't raise your hand for everything. But I was that big dummy.
I think it's the opposite. I think the people who ask questions all the time are the ones who learn quickest.
No, you're right.
Because I don't like to sit and wonder things either. I don't care if I expose my ignorance by saying, hey, what does that mean? With that acronym? You know, people throw around acronyms all the time and most people pretend to know what they mean.
Yeah.
If I ever don't know one, I'm like, what's that?
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. It's always having it's not like what you know. It's sometimes what question you're asking.
Exactly.
And really understand it. There's people who say, yes, okay, I get it. But do they really get it?
There's a quote that's always been kind of important in my life and how I think. And it's for every answer, there's a more beautiful question. Yeah. And it's like, hey, what were you thinking? The questioning and the journey to the answer is really where knowledge and wisdom comes from. So it's pretty cool.
And then if we continue on that, that'd be a whole other podcast.
Yeah. So yeah, let's get through your story here. Yeah, so you're cutting tools company, you learned some CNCs, you're starting to tie all of your loves together. And then what's next?
So what happened was we bought some real nice equipment out of Switzerland. I mastered the programming. I had the electronics behind and mechanical and everything going. And I got offered a position from the manufacturer that we're buying these machines from.
From the machine tool builder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't take the job. I loved what I was doing. It was 5 minutes from my house. That job was a lot of travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't take it. In another way, it's I actually quit my job and got into real estate. This is like in 2001. And I bought.
Yeah, you have a lot of tabs open, Manny.
Yeah, right. So I was that kid that couldn't afford a house when I got married, and I bought a crappy one, but we remodeled it and found out it was worth twice as much, and kind of did that.
Yeah.
And during that time, a headhunter out of Texas, of all places, he called me and said, hey, Manny, you have a customer in California that set up a cutting tool company in Bangalore, India. They're having some restructuring issues, and would you like to consult and go out there and see how you can help them?
Well, I never imagined I would be in India.
And for me, it was just, you know what, they're going to pay me X amount. I'll be there for a month. I took it as a vacation. I really was not serious in thinking of just staying there. I was like, hey, well, I'm not doing much right now. My house is, the guys are taking care of it. So let's go to India for a month. Let's see how that looks. I got there. I just, no sugarcoating. I told the client, I said, I would fire half the people you have here. Your best operator, I would make him your quality guy. He didn't understand that one, but he did later that. He knew what he was making, so he'd be the quality guy to not let nothing bad leave, right? I took that company. Later, well, I did come back. They offered me something that I said, well, it makes sense. And I almost stayed out there for a year, coming back and forth. I was 24 years old at that time.
Wow. What a leap.
Given the checkbook, given the trust to make the moves to make this organization where...
So you ended up in more of a leadership position for that Indian company?
Wow. Yes, I was the manufacturing and engineering manager.
Wow, great.
Really from structuring other...
And that was at 24?
24.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
So they must have heard you. Sometimes when you don't sugarcoat things, you tell people like it is, it works out a lot better.
That's the only way it should be, man.
Yeah.
If you go to a doctor, I expect that as bad as it's going to hurt, you know, it's either good or bad news, but it should be the right news.
Yeah, just tell them what it is. I'm like that too.
Yeah.
Okay, so at some point, you get into this maintenance world. So take me from India back to...
So... It was kind of hard to stay in India. They gave me a great offer to stay for multiple years, equity, share, and all this stuff. And I just couldn't do it because I was recently married.
Mm-hmm.
I made my daughter, my second kid, while I was in India. She's my souvenir.
Yeah.
Sudeya is a name from India that I grabbed.
Yeah.
And so every time,
what's her name again?
Sudeya.
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 Okay, beautiful. So that's like an Indian name, and, yeah. And that's why you named her that.
She's my souvenir, I call it. Yeah.
That's funny.
I had to come back. I couldn't do that. I came back.
Didn't want to build a life in India.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm gone 39 months. My real estate side of it, like, I didn't want to start over doing something. And I called that company, the Swiss company. So I said, you still have that job. I'm back. And so, no, I went back there. They took me to Switzerland for a while, built machines out there, taught me the real nitty gritty. Like,
how to build machines.
Yeah. You could go to school and learn the theory, but you can't really be taught that unless you're on the factory floor.
Yeah. And the way the Swiss, the amount of passion and quality and just commitment to perfection with those machines. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a different level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really appreciate it being there and really like...
So that's absorbing. How you learn the anatomy of a machine tool and the construction and just all of the intricacies.
Yeah. And that machine I built was actually my machine, and I'm looking for it. I might buy it one day because I helped sell the machine here locally in Chicago
when
I was here.
One of the machines that you built?
Yeah. So when I went out there from the casting through the panels... through lasering it in and then doing the test cuts, I did the whole thing. So when I said, all right, where's this machine going? Because they didn't have a customer name. They had a number because, you know, it's confidential when customers are going through. And they said, well, Manny, this is the one that you sold to this customer. The salesman did it, but I convinced them to not to buy the other brand.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because I knew the machine well, you know.
You said, I built this thing myself.
I knew the software and everything. And I said, you know, this is the pluses on this machine against these other brands because I knew all the other brands too.
Yeah.
So that's a power in knowing your competition.
So, okay, machine builder. You were a machine assembler, builder, you know, all that. And then what was next after that?
Well, that was a part of the gig to learn the machine because I was a service and application engineer for this company.
Okay, gotcha.
So I would install, I would stay there, train the customer. Then whenever there was a break or fix, I was out there doing that too. So that's how I got into it. And it was pretty cool because, like I said, tabs open, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this career path is great for young people that really like to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Just trust your education, trust your theory of knowledge of mechanical and electrical, and learn. You're never going to stop learning in this industry, and you're never going to stop growing. This will lead to where I'm at probably today.
And too. So I imagine the fact that you knew how the machine came together, you were part of the build team. When you move into maintenance, it's a natural segue, right? You know what can go wrong, you know how to fix it, you know when you can repair a part versus replace it, stuff like that.
Yeah, so after that, the travel was heavy. That's the other part of this world sometimes that you travel a lot.
What percentage of your time were you traveling during the thick of it?
So I wanted to be home, right? When I left India, I was leaving Monday on an airplane, coming back Friday on an airplane. So I was actually seeing my family more when I was in India than when I was working for this company.
Yeah, well, it's funny how that works.
Yeah, so I stuck around for a while, but luckily a local distributor opened up and I stayed local. I started seeing like more of the business in terms of the customers. I'd be at a customer and they'll ask me, hey, all right, cool, you're done with this machine. Can you help me this other one? But it was like XYZ brand and we don't touch it. And so they had to find somebody and, oh, the guy's going to be here in 2 weeks and has to come from Germany or from Japan. Or
so when you were working for a machine tool dealer that had certain lines, you knew you could fix other types of machinery, but you had red tape preventing you from doing that because of agreements, commitments, things like that. Hey, we service our type, but not all types.
Correct. And I'm sure there's some liabilities in there and stuff.
Yeah. No, I get that.
And even another company that would make the control could only work on the control stuff, but if it was the ball screw, they couldn't touch that. They didn't have their name on it, you know? I started seeing a lot of that. And what I look at, what we do is we're like doctors, right? We go out, our patients are machines. It's like a doctor watching a sick person or somebody that needs his help and him having his hands tied. So that was kind of like the aha moment was more of me in my heart wanting to help these people. Like a lot of people, not to bring religion too much into this, but they think that God gives you a gift. And everybody thinks that football players and movie stars and singers are gifted. I think each one of us should dig deep inside and see where that gift really is. And to me, this is my gift. This is my way of helping the world and helping people. And,
that's awesome.
And enjoying it.
Yeah.
It evolved. I was here in Chicago. I started off on my own. Just, you know, that one guy.
So you were just like a freelance, full stack maintenance guy?
Yeah. Me and another buddy, we got together and started doing this. And we had a couple of big clients, you know, because we were in there. And we would never leave because we could fix every single piece of their equipment. And the joke was that when customers said, hey, you know, I was asking for coffee. He's like, hey, our espresso machine's broken. Can you fix that? I'm like, oh, heck yes. I go, you know, if that doesn't work, nobody else does, right? Let's start with this one.
So that's the first machine you had to fix.
Yeah.
And I know you're trying to leave names out, but I know it was a big agriculture company, one of the monsters.
One of the big construction monsters that has a fence.
In construction, agriculture, yeah.
That town has two places, two complexes that have a barbed wire fence. And I think the state penitentiary is easier to get out of sometimes.
Yeah. They weren't letting you out either because they needed the maintenance guy.
Yeah. And it was a good company. I learned a lot there too because they had like every single brand in there. And we're assisting they had a contract maintenance company in there. So we would be like the first line of defense.
And, so you were like subcontracted by their integrated maintenance?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were helping them train their employees. We were like the first person to look at the machine, get the diagnostics there, and tell their people what to do. And
were you making money doing that?
Yeah.
You were killing it?
I was, I guess.
So why do you do the insane thing and start your own business?
Because I was already doing that.
Yeah.
That was it. But the thing is, the money is not, I always say it's a side effect.
Yeah.
I was doing what I love.
Well, I guess when I say start your own business, like you were pretty much captive to that one account and you were killing it there, right? I mean, you weren't doing much outside of that.
And the thing was that I was not attending to the other customers that we had. It wasn't not just one. We had a lot of other customers, right?
There was two of you and the one resource we all have the same amount of is time.
Yeah.
So there's only so much time to be everywhere else.
And a good mentor once told me that, Manny, you only have 24 hours a day and that's all you can sell.
Yeah.
You know, you got to scale and multiply, right?
So that's what I'm talking about with the insane entrepreneurial leap that so many of us make, where people are like, man, you had a good thing going. Why'd you have to go try to scale it? Why'd you have to go try to do something bigger? So take me to that moment where, Because was it called Tech CNC when it was just you and one other guy?
No.
What was it called?
Edge.
Edge,
the
yeah.
Edge.
The Edge. Oh, that's kind of cool, man. Sounds like a WWE guy. Lucha Libre. Mm-hmm.
And they're on the entrepreneurial side. I got another crash course. I mean, it was a friend of 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a partnership that I trusted. And he was the only person on that paper.
Yeah.
We went to Texas. A friend of ours was out there, says, hey, you guys, I need some help out here. It's crazy busy. Can you guys come out here for a couple of weeks?
It was January. Where were you before that? You were in like Chicago, Indiana, something like that?
Chicago, yeah. I'm from Waukegan.
Okay,
I
gotcha.
So I was in between Milwaukee and Chicago.
So you went from Waukegan to Texas.
Houston, yeah. Texas, yeah. And this is right that year with the polar vortex. And I was like, I was already looking for warmer pastures. I was really looking at the Carolinas. I went to school out there for some of this machine companies. I went to San Diego area because my family had properties out that direction. So I was looking for either one of those nice warmer climates, right? I'm a Chicago guy. I was born here, you know, but I was getting tired of being in my house 6 months a year.
Sure. No, I hear that.
You know, and dragging my toolbox and breaking the path with my toolbox, you know, over 6 inches of snow.
And you told me a crazy story, and I want to get to this takeaway, this maintenance checklist that we're going to talk about in a minute. But you told me you almost died. It was so cold in Chicago during the polar vortex. Like, maybe give us 2 minutes on that one real quick. Yeah, because it's an interesting story.
That's what, when I said, you know, I'm out of here. I was almost out of here. I was shoveling snow, although I had a service, but what else do you do in the winter when you're stuck? So I went out there and, you know, you sweat when you shovel, you know, you're out there and I was breathing that cold air and whatever minus 40 or minus 30 it was, unknowingly that I was freezing my lungs. I got a bad cough that transgressed into really bad cough. And
like all within an hour or so?
No, it was, I got sick slowly and it was like about a week and it's just starting to get pretty bad.
So your lungs froze that day you were shoveling and then you progressively got sicker and sicker.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I was breathing that cold air.
Yeah.
Not knowing that I was like literally impacting and just smacking my lungs with that cold air. And that trip down to that company that I would do every day, it was a 250-mile round trip. I would leave at 3 in the morning, get to skip the Chicago traffic, get back home about 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. So, I mean, that's like boot camp. Like, for entrepreneurs out there, it wasn't a job. I mean, this was a mission. Yeah. It's always going to be a mission.
You had a plan, yeah. Yeah, you were never going to do that for your entire life. You had to grind out those early years.
Everyone would tell you the grind, you know.
So how sick did you get?
I was driving back, man, and I just got a cough attack. Like, you know, when you just can't stop coughing. I started blacking out, going 80 miles an hour on the highway. I could not see, and it was rush hour coming back home. I pulled to the side. I put park on, and I almost fainted. When I came back, I put hospital near me.
Yeah, yeah.
Drove myself to the hospital. They laid me down right away. My heartbeat was like at 40 beats a minute. So not knowing that your left lung provides oxygen to your blood. So the condition my lungs were, bronchitis and all that buildup, and I almost deprived my body of oxygen and passed away.
Wow.
And it was just like, what the heck?
How long were you in the hospital before you were good?
I was just there, that day.
Okay.
I was in the ER.
So they got you sorted out.
They brought me back up. They gave me all these inhalers.
But then you were like, I can't handle the cold anymore. I got to go.
Yeah. They told me why it happened, what. And it took a good week just at home to get back to life again.
So your buddy's out in Houston. He says, come help me for a couple of weeks. And you're like, yeah, I got to get out of here.
I go out there. It was January at this time. I took a coat and everything. I forgot, and it's hot out there, I guess. But it was 75 degrees. I had a hoodie. It was beautiful. I saw palm trees. That was my signal. Carolina, North Carolina South has palm trees. California has palm trees.
Yeah, you needed palm trees wherever you were going to go.
That was it. Okay. That was like my first checkbox, okay?
Gotcha.
If I was going to move, I was going to take off. I called my wife. I said, hey, what do you think about Houston? She's like, you know, it's hot out there. I go, yeah, but I'll take that over anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I ended up in Houston. Just started. I liked it. The culture, the people. It's, I think, the number one manufacturing hub in the U.S. right now. You know, Chicago used to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're a close second. You know, Rockford here, it was.
Yeah, we have a lot of machinists per capita in Rockford, but there's a lot going on in Houston. So
yeah, and so when I went out there, I just basically put my toolbox in the back of my trunk and, you know, a set of clothes, just started knocking doors. It was scary because it was, like I say, you jump off the cliff every day sometimes. And
so you had a couple opportunities from your buddy who asked you to come out there, but then everything else you just had to hustle and go shop to shop, door to door, say, hey, I can fix machines.
Yeah, I went on Google and called people and I had a system, and it's something that doesn't happen by accident. I believe that I've taught myself pretty well in business and how to approach and talk to customers, and over 200 customers now. I mean, I think it's a testament to that. In two countries, relationships are very important to keep, to make, and to honor.
Yeah, so you just built it from the ground up, and we'll fast forward through a lot, but now TechCNC, give me an idea like what you got going on. How many employees?
In Houston, we have 13 employees right now. We have a full office that we're investing because for the scaling, our plan is still much bigger than where it's at today. We've invested into office, into parts department, HR, sales and operations people.
My dad always jokes, you know, hey, we got a real company now.
Yeah.
So you got that same thing going on. Yeah, we got a real thing here.
I'm learning that I'm not a good micromanager and I never want to be. I hire the right people and I empower them. You know, I actually say I believe in them more than they believe in themselves.
Yeah, I've met some of the people on your team. They're all solid, great people. So
yeah, thank you.
Well, cool. Man, I love it. I love the audience gets to know you a little bit. And then it's like, okay, what can I take away from this guy that I can use in my shop? And so we'll get into that in just a second here. But I want to jump into a quick little segment where we can shine the leadership spotlight on another great leader, not just Manny today. We got a couple other spotlights to shine. So
in this community of manufacturing leaders, there's always somebody doing something amazing, but most of the time it goes unseen. Making Chips wants to change that, one leadership story at a time. It's time to give credit to the best in the business. It's time to learn from our peers so we can all rise together. It's time for Making Chips to shine the manufacturing leadership spotlight.
I'm so pumped about this event we're doing on August 15th, right here in Rockford at the Making Chips headquarters. We've got live music. We've got a big tent. We've got the best restaurant in Rockford doing salmon tacos, wood fire pizzas. Someone's going to be working the boring bar. We've got this boring bar that we don't use enough, and we're going to use it this night for sure. It's just going to be a great night, and it's all for a great cause. So I have a friend named Noah Currier. He's a wounded military veteran who is now a quadriplegic. I've told his story on previous episodes. He didn't take that bad deck he was dealt after his tours in Iraq and just wallow in self-pity. He rose up and he created the Oscar Mike Foundation, which is a foundation for getting military veterans who are wounded, ill, they have issues that prevent them from playing sports like they used to. It gets them into adaptive sports. So for example, the wheelchair rugby games that are in Paris right now, Oscar Mike has one of the players on the team. The coach of Oscar Mike is the coach of the US team. It's awesome. And so half hour away from us in Marengo, Illinois, the Oscar Mike Foundation exists. They have some really cool apparel, awesome shirts with military and patriotic themes. And they even have a custom shirt for this event that we're doing. So the event has some great sponsors. I want to quickly thank them because they're what's making all this possible. Obviously, thank Noah and thank Oscar Mike, making some sweet manufacturing leader shirts that you can get at the event. But I want to thank PBC Linear, Born & Co., Zengers, what's up, Jason? Assured Partners, Manpower, Cord Construction, Signature Bank, Youngbrig Industries, Majestic Steel, First Benefits Group, Field Fastener, TechCNC, what up, Manny?
What's up?
ProShop ERP, of course, the IMTS. This is the road to IMTS. So they're a huge sponsor for it. The Rock River Valley Tooling and Machining Association, Ingersoll Machine Tools, and then my own family business, Hennig and Advanced Machine and Engineering. Just seriously so pumped about this event. It's going to be a blast. So if you're in the Rockford area, we'll post a link to the Eventbrite page where you can get tickets to it. But really thankful for all the sponsors, IMTS, ProShop. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Chris Lukey, who started this whole tour, the Manufacturing Happy Hour Midwest Summer Vacation Tour. He's done Milwaukee, I think Madison, Chicago. He's done all these locations. He called me up about a month ago and said, hey, let's do the Rockford one as a team, Making Chips and Manufacturing Happy Hour. Let's do it together. And safe to say, this is going to be the biggest one. So we're really pumped about it. I just want to thank everybody. Thank Noah for what he's doing. And come out and support our military, support our local manufacturing community, and have some fun. All right, cool. So let's get right back into the checklist. So, all right, Manny, we want to equip and inspire the manufacturing leader today. And when we were talking about what to record, you said something that really was impactful. You said, you know, we all learn how to fix things from YouTube. My dishwasher is broken. My fridge is broken. Something's wrong with your car. You pull it up on YouTube and you figure it out. You said, my goal for this podcast would be someone could listen to it and they would have a program, a PM program for their machine tools. We joke with the title of the episode, if you don't plan machine tool maintenance, your machines will plan it for you.
All the time.
And so
at the wrong time too.
Yeah, exactly. At the worst possible time. So let's get into it. I'm looking at your checklist. You got it in front of me. But before we get into like what to check, you have kind of three tiers. Talk about those a bit. What are the tiers of maintenance?
That's another thing how TechCNC wanted to innovate, right? We work on everything out there. We try to help. And customers actually let us learn on their machines rather than wait maybe for a tech from Germany to get here in 2 weeks. And also with the tiers, we went a little bit above that. You're going to innovate something. We say we're innovating how service is done. So that's even within this PM program. I've never seen it done this way, but I knew this is how I wanted to do it. Like our tier one is basically your OEM. You open your book, you buy a machine. It says change your oils.
All the things that the OEM tells you to do.
Yeah, you know, geometric checks like on a lathe, alignments, and on a mill, what to check. So that's what our one is. So you could just open up your book if you have it already, and that's what our one is. Number two, we actually start taking covers off and cleaning around the machine, cleaning the inside of the machine. It's almost like a detail.
Like detailing a car, yeah, versus just running it through the car wash.
Yeah, you know, that includes tier one, right? And then so we start vacuuming chips out. And sometimes the joke that they see is like, hey, well, you know, I'm not paying you to clean my machine. I go, well, you guys want to know that this is pretty much like 90% of the reason why things happen, because you don't.
Because you don't clean it?
Yeah, you know, 5 years later, you got, you know, 3 inches of chips creeping up to your X-axis motor on a mill.
So yeah, you're literally pulling back the curtain, or in this case, the way covers or whatever it might be, and you're cleaning out the inside precision components of the machine, making sure nothing's getting into the motors, things like that.
Yeah, that's our tier three.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, that's tier three. Okay.
Well, the tier two, it takes all the covers.
Okay,
you know, but not weight covers.
Gotcha.
You know, we get into the machine, we get it there, but the Cadillac version of our PM includes everything. And what I mean by everything, it becomes our machine after this. And we say, let's do this the first time. It's pricier. Yes, it's time. Sometimes 3 to 4 days we will spend on this machine. But the thing is that we take the weight covers, we'll open them up. We start looking at all the ball screws, like go deep in there, take all the build up, your linear guideways or your box ways. And really that's where your ball screws are. That's where's your precision, right?
Yeah.
Your motors, your cables, chips that build up and start eating into your conduit.
Mm-hmm.
They'll burn up a drive and a motor.
Right.
And, you know, maybe sometimes a whole machine, I've seen it. So it's like a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 fix that this PM is avoiding. And so that's how we get
deep into it. Pay now or pay later. You can pay a little bit now, clean up your machine, or you can wait till you burn stuff up. So
Yeah. It's
and we say that all the time. Yeah. I mean, we've worked together on a lot of weight cover projects. For those that don't know, that's what we do at Hennig. We build machine protection, telescopic weight covers, things like that. That's one of the things that we do. And people will just deal with it. They'll just have gaps in their weight covers. They'll have chips falling in on the ball screws, and they'll be like, everything looks kind of fine, whatever. My machine's running fine. Turns out they're burning up a ball screw that costs 5 times, 10 times more than all the covers anyway.
Yep.
So it's like, hey, let's sort this out now. Little problems that look small are actually big problems if you don't take care of them.
Yeah.
So, okay, cool. So yeah, doing it in tiers, but this checklist that you've got that you're going to give to the audience here, would this be like everything in tier three then?
This checklist is in tier one.
Okay. So this is your tier one checklist.
This is our tier one. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So like tier one covers everything. To tier three and tier two is more of the cleaning and deep.
Like that detailing.
Yeah, that tier three, when I'm done with that machine, you could put up for sale, and it's like it's a used vehicle in the car lot that just been gone through.
We've all heard how many shops have seen massive results with ProShop, but did you know that they have a new podcast out where they tell these authentic stories, and it's really inspiring?
Yeah, it's called Manufacturing Transformed, Real Shops and Real Stories. And you can listen wherever you get your podcasts. I've seen a lot of these little clips pop up on my LinkedIn feed, and so far the episodes have been really impactful. So find Manufacturing Transformed on your favorite podcast player and check it out today.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. That's a good parallel. So let's get into these different categories. And the first category you have here on the list is lubrication. So what are the things that you need to check there? if a maintenance guy's listening, or maybe an owner of a shop who's trying to make sure the maintenance guy's doing all the stuff that needs to be done in the category of lubrication, just quickly go through that.
So lubrication goes to all your ball screws, right? It goes to even your spindle, oil lube. We get into that a little deeper later, but lubrication, that's what keeps the joints moving in your body, right? Like your machine here. So back and forth, your spindles, your ball screws, and all your axes. If you don't have lubrication in your box ways, if they're just box or linear guideways, there are bearings running in there, and you're just going to start rusting that, pitting them, and they just eat it itself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see here, greasing the chip conveyor motor, your way lube, so all of that stuff. Would you say, if you walked into a random machine shop with all your experience doing this for all sorts of different customers, and you just checked any 10-year-old machine or whatever, you just go in and take a look at that, what are the chances that there's lubrication issues?
Very high. Many of them don't even go into cleaning the way lube tank, which is part of this part of it, because a lot of that grime that is in the bottom of that way lube tank starts at the receptacle that you're using to put it in. So it goes very basic. That's why, to me, it's a very basic thing. The usual is a Folgers coffee tin full of everything else in there. And that's what they go to the big tank. They put some way lube, then they drop it into their way lube.
Yeah, so it's already like contaminated before it even starts.
Yeah, so they're already just waiting for it to happen. And many of these machines that we see, it's maybe their X-axis or their Z-axis. Some of the distributor manifolds are already wide open. They're getting like pressure alarms, or they're just completely closed and they're not getting lubrication.
Gotcha. All right, let's go to this next category, hoses and lines. What do you got to check on the checklist for hoses and lines?
So here, it's also very important, because your hydraulic lines for your machinery, your coolant, your pump, your air, these machines move. Those hoses, majority of the time, are moving with the machine. So they're in a conduit, they're crinkling and coming, and that time is when we actually look for chips also.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I've seen hoses, just coolant lines pop because you have a chip in there and it's going back and forth. And
yeah, so you're basically moving a sharp knife edge over a hose, and of course it's going to get holes in it and pop.
Yeah, so that and just wear and tear. You know, sure. You got the steel braided ones too. And
yeah.
It's a big mess. I mean, these are the worst messes there is, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, the hoses and lines.
Yeah, I mean, if you pop a hydraulic unit, oil, it's terrible to pick up, you know?
Yeah. All right, next category. This is where we're getting into your original love of electronics.
Yeah, so that's like the brain, right? That's the background, your nervous system. So electronics, we go into and just check the basics of what are they punching in every day, the control, the numbers, make sure your buttons are working, e-stops, you know, the safety side of it too. But we open the back end of that control cabinet. Many of them, I want you guys to go out there and look at yours. You know, you could open it very easy. There's a lot, because they're usually hanging on that one arm, and that actually can transmit coolant, vapor. And unknowingly, you open, and I've seen a puddle of coolant inside your electrical cabinet because of that. So it's open that even chips get in there. Sometimes I wonder, how the heck did it get in there, right? With the machine off, right, we go in there, and we also just make sure everything's sitting properly, because if you have a mill or a lathe and you're doing interrupted cuts, vibration, it wiggles out. Believe it or not, some of these cables wiggle out. Unfortunately, some of our service calls, we go in there and just like tighten up one cable and we charge them a minimum, which is a minimum charge to be there. And customer's like, you just fixed this in like 1 minute and I can't believe it, blah, blah, blah. And so we go through the whole electrical, the control, and in the cabinet. We do this.
So that's a good lesson for people. I mean, obviously, companies like TechCNC, any of these maintenance companies, they want to come in and get paid to fix stuff. But like, if you follow this checklist and you do this stuff on your own, you might not need to call somebody.
Yeah.
You might be able to sort it out before it gets there. And if they're going to send a guy out there, they're going to get paid for it. Mm-hmm. And it might be for something simple like that.
Yeah.
That you could have prevented yourself.
It may look simple, but it's just experience and what we look for. But we've seen it enough, and
most people don't have a program like this.
No, and we even tell the customer, if you want, put one of your guys that you want and we'll train them. Most people say, well, you're losing business. I'm like, no, you know, I'm able to help this customer stay up. The more that his machines stay up, the more I can help other customers.
Yeah, you're a trusted advisor at that point. And when there's something that comes in that requires a higher level, who are they going to call? That guy that they already trust, that they know he's not just trying to gouge him for whatever dollars he can get out of him. Okay, let's go to this next category here. What do we got?
Now we're getting to the geometric, the precision of the machine, like backlash checks. So that's checking the ball screws, checking the backlash, repeatability, on your X, Y, Z, all your axes. Even rotaries, you got a fourth axis rotary or fifth trunnion table. You know, we put indicators on there. And then we start checking if they have backlash, if you're losing position, and that translates to your parts.
Of course it does, yeah. I mean, this is a precision machining world that we're in, and if your machine's off, then everything's off.
Yeah, and when you work with tens and thousands, you try to explain to your friends that don't know this world, and, well, your hair is like five times thicker than the tolerance I have.
Yeah, that's something else. Okay, let's talk about safety. I mean, obviously, poor maintenance leads to more problems with people getting hurt and safety issues.
A big OSHA thing is the door keys in there. I know this is out there and we all close our eyes, but the majority of some smaller companies or even bigger companies, you need the door open to do setups. And sometimes you can't with the door key. It won't let you do that.
The whole lockout, yeah. Tag out or whatever.
We do look at that system, make sure it works properly, make sure they're in there. We put them back on if they're off. It's up to them. I mean, it's liability, right? So I'm leaving a machine house.
So if they take off their safety interlocks, you re-put them on, yeah. And say, if you take them off again, don't tell me.
Yeah, because I have to walk away with the machine being right.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Instances, you know, we will just mark it. Customer decided to leave it off. And we just, for our liability, we do note that.
Gotcha.
The e-stops, make sure they all work. The e-stops are there for a reason. And if you hit one and it doesn't e-stop the machine, then it's really not going to help you later, you know?
Right. When Gary gets his necktie caught in the machine too, and the e-stop doesn't work, there's no more Gary.
Oh, man. But yeah, so some people jumper those things, you know?
Yeah.
They do quick fixes and forget about them, and it just happens. ATC doors, you know, you can't stick your head in there while magazines running around. Some of these 12-inch tools will leave a little mark.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So that's safety, yeah.
Yeah. All right, this next category, a little close to home for us. So let's talk about that.
So here, the machine is a simple mechanism, compiled of everything, but what's protecting everything else, you know? So we have weight covers. The weight covers are compiled with wipers that allow the weight cover to move back and forth. You need a gap. That wiper is really the buffer between the two sheet metals running around. Now,
yeah, think like a big telescope, right? But square boxes.
Yes, sir.
And yeah, you got a gap in that telescope. Or you, imagine denting a telescope and trying to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't work too well. So when you have a small gap and you can still actuate the cover, is that okay? No problem? Or we got a problem?
Well, the gap is not allowing chips and coolant in. So if your chip is bigger than the gap, you might get lucky. But it's recommended to change wipers before you have to change the whole weight cover. The good thing, there's repair side of it too now.
Yeah, wipers don't cost that much. Covers don't really cost that much. They cost more than wipers. But everything under that, it gets expensive.
It's protecting something, yeah. And so that's when you get into everything else that's underneath. And tier three, I hope you guys do your own tier three and take those wiper and weight covers out. The difficult part is making sure you put them on right. Okay, guys? You know, weight covers, ask any tech. Sometimes that's our pet peeve. Sometimes it takes a while to do all that. And some guys will say, hey, customer, if you take off the weight covers and put them back on, you know, it'll be less time and it'll be cheaper for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, it is a delicate thing. Everything in the machine, as easy as it looks, it's not. When you put these weight covers on, tighten them up with a snug tight, actuate your machine left to right, up, down, negative, positive, you know, mm-hmm. the whole travel, and make sure they sit properly. Seeing people just put them on, tighten up all the screws, and the first rapper they go, they break
them. Yeah, they put them on crooked. And then once you fold up a cover, man, it's... you got to send it in for repair.
Yes, sir.
I know a place where you can do that. I don't try to plug Hennig too much on the show, but we do repair weight covers at service stations all throughout the country.
Yeah, and we use Hennig, so I attest, and I'll be a reference. Call me.
There we go.
You know what they're doing.
All right, let's get into the next three categories before we end here. There's the next one here.
Yeah, so that's with the tier three, right? We're pulling it away, but even the tier two gets into this, and tier one, we still have to look at the motors. The belts. Some motors are pulling axis or spindles and they have belts on it. We make sure everything's there. We write down if they need to have something changed, we get the part number. So ATC axis motors.
And I think that's a good point too. Like being able to source the replacement parts is not always easy. So my world of covers and conveyors, you know, that could be a 15-year-old machine from who knows where on the other side of the world, and you're trying to get a replacement part. You can't Amazon that.
Oh, yeah.
So the guys like you, you got tricks on, hey, I know how to source this thing.
Yeah, and our trick is, we talked earlier about scaling, you know, TechCNC is looking at the future. We invested in a parts coordinator. We have a service coordinator too on the job now. So what that does is we are a parts department. All of our customers can call us, not even if we're doing the service, and we source that. And then with the service partnerships we have and vendors that we have, we extend that to them. You're only worth as much as your network, right? Everybody out there, my network is yours. You guys get my number, my email, and I'll get you to the right people. But we do help everybody get their stuff.
So you talked about motors, and a lot of times there's spare parts that you got to source for that. These last two categories, let's go.
So air filters, we always see the air that's in the shop. I've been to some nice facilities where I think my shoes are dirtier than their floor. Then, you know, you got the high productions that, you know, you think that you're at a downtown of a major city because the smog in there is pretty major.
Yeah, yeah.
Every machine has drives and electronics inside. Those fans are there sucking air in to cool it down. The AC systems, they have filters. Those are usually gunked up because they're breathing everything that's in there at a high velocity.
Yeah, tying maintenance back to health again if you don't change those filters. Like people are breathing in that crap all the time. So yeah.
They'll be like my lungs were during that bad ordeal in the winter.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's very simple. That's probably one of the most simple one. You put a filter element that they sell out there. A lot of people just even put with pins. Mm-mm. But the original ones come with that metal one, right? So what we do there is we take them off and hot water, degreaser. We like simple green, stuff like that. We don't like to use harsh chemicals ever, but they clean up very well.
Nice.
Most of these filters are able to be cleaned and you don't have to repurchase.
And then the last, but maybe most expensive, maybe most important category. I know that they're all important, but like the engine of your machine tool.
Yeah.
Let's get to that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So the spindle, it has a big major impact to the chatter, to the finish. Besides, you know, the ball screw, somebody might think, oh, my ball screw is giving me a bad finish. No, well, really within the spindle itself, you have the drawbar. We go in there, we check draw force. Many of you might not have one, but the one that we do use is a Ott power check, which my buddy here, Nick.
So Ott is our partner in Europe for advanced machine engineering. We have a tool clamping systems group within our business, but there's 10 different pull force gauges out there. What's unique about the Ott pull force gauge is it allows you to like adjust the dimensions on the gauge and see kind of where you're at. And it gives you more insight than the standard, whatever brand X pull force gauge.
And it'll give you a digital readout. There's a few out there and price. And sometimes I do believe you get what you pay for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we do.
But I think regardless of the brand of the pull force gauge, that's not the point we're trying to make. Like people don't check the pull force.
No.
It's crazy. So you got tool holders. You know there's a retention knob that the gripper grabs and pulls it into the spindle. And you get chatter. You get issues with part finish being off and just things being off, and you don't even check your pull force to figure out like, well, maybe the springs inside that drawbar that actually pull this tapered tool holder into this tapered spindle shaft. If those springs don't work, you don't have that solid connection. You don't have any rigidity and you got a mess.
Yeah. And people attribute it to other parts of their machine and spend tons of dollars because they're not checked that.
Yeah. So they'll go replace what? Like
ball screws. You know,
I've seen a lot of drawbar issues. Or they'll just be like, something's wrong with my spindle, and they'll replace the whole spindle.
Rebuild the whole spindle because they have run out on their tool. When we check the spindle for run out, that's also part of the PM. We check the cone, we check the actual spindle itself, and that you could differentiate whether your play is inside because of the drawbar or the spindle. And it's from maybe a $3,000 fix total to maybe $30,000 fix, depending on what type of spindle you have. So I've seen that too. We rebuild spindles too. So sometimes we get the whole spindle in after they sent it to us and it's like it was just a drawbar. But at that time, you got to redo the spindle because they lose preload and they take off bearings and it's a mess.
Yeah, that's another one of those cases like pay a little bit now, fix the issue or replace your entire spindle. And sometimes those cost more than some machine tools.
Yeah. One thing that we do is every one of these items, we put a remark and we'd say what condition it was, how did we leave it, and recommend. The other thing that sometimes happens is like they go with the program and they don't follow up with the recommendations. A lot of people think that PMs are for us to make more business. It's like, no, we're doing a PM and we even let them know. So most people have a maintenance department.
Oh, is this just some sort of scheme so they can get more money out of me? This preventative maintenance program?
Yeah, it sounds like a bad word to them sometimes. And to me, I'm really like speaking out of my heart, trying to say, I really don't want to see you again anytime soon. You know, and like,
yeah, you're a great guy and everything, but I don't want to see you.
Yeah, and I always say that. I always say, all right, man, when we're done, I hope I don't see you again. What does that mean? That means your machine's running well. Give me a call. I'd like to see you at a restaurant. I'll buy you a drink or something, you know, but what is it? No news is good news?
Yeah,
exactly. My father always says that. No news is good news. So,
no, I mean, I think that makes sense. So what else is... They don't have to hire you to do the PM. Like, you just gave us the checklist. You'll actually email this to me. We'll share it with the show notes. Like, people can look at this checklist. They can write in their own remarks. You can do this yourself. We're not trying to just figure out how to send business to TechCNC. We're trying to help our audience of manufacturing leaders make their shop run smoothly without downtime. So I appreciate you sharing all this. And that's really the point of Making Chips, right? We want to equip and inspire manufacturing leaders. I think your story inspired the entrepreneurs out there. I can tell you there's a massive, massive gap in service and maintenance folks. That's why you never meet a decent service maintenance guy who's not busy. I always say there's no such thing as a good machinist who's unemployed. The same thing with the maintenance guys. So your story, you know, might inspire somebody to get into that. Yeah, parts of the job are dirty. I mean, it's also a great business. I mean, it's a business that's definitely in demand. I've seen you grow a nice, healthy, profitable business, and it's been awesome to watch, awesome to be a partner with you where we can. I think that's how we inspired people, but we also equipped people on this episode. Take this checklist and make sure you're doing these things in your shop, and you won't have to call Manny.
So I've gotten messages even. I'm pretty big on LinkedIn. I throw a lot of this stuff out there, what we're doing. I never put the company we're at. But I try to educate people. Knowledge is one thing. It was a part of my public speaking course in college. And that was my subject. What do I collect? I collect knowledge. Why? Because you can share it. And you don't lose it. And you gain more when you do. Like what you're saying about people saying, hey, you're giving it all away. You're making less work for me because you're teaching people. I'm like, if you're worried about that, you might not be that great of a technician that you're worried about work.
You know? Exactly, because you'll never run out of work. So thank you, Manny. Manny's growing like crazy, always looking to hire people. If you're a maintenance technician, really anywhere in the country, especially around the Houston area, like reach out to him, because guess what? People don't do this PM and a lot of maintenance is required. So you want to work for a guy who's passionate about this, who's got a lot to share. Manny's hiring. And I've enjoyed partnering with you. I've enjoyed all the opportunities we've had together to help our customers be better. And even this opportunity just to share with the audience, like, do this stuff on your own. Figure this out. You don't need to hire a maintenance guy if you employ one. And you can just follow this PM checklist. Mm-hmm. So share this with someone who can benefit from it. Rate, review, remark on whatever podcatcher you're using. It's Spotify, Apple. I don't know. There's a million of them, but yeah, appreciate it. And as always, if your machines are down, you're not making chips. And if you're not making chips, you're not making money. Bam.